Welcome, students. This is a lecture prezi on life pre-World War I. What's going on in the basically on the European continent and how it affects other places around the globe just prior to the onset of World War I. This really fills in some information that your textbook kind of brings about in chapter 26, and then in chapter 27 we're actually going to get into World War I. So this lecture will kind of help set the stage for what you read in chapter 27. The European continent in the late 19th century really began to shape and provide the foundation for which much of Western civilization is now rests. So much of what we see today was really adapted and began back about 50 years before World War I. What we see happening prior to World War I is the growth of population, capitalism, industry, and urban centers. And these entities rapidly changed the European landscape by the last half of the 19th century, drastically changed the way the European landscape looked. The women in the workforce, the women in the factories, are a clear indication of how life was changing on the European continent. Industrial changes were quite significant on the European continent. Basically, the continental industries, or I should say the European continental industries, caught up to those of Britain toward the end of the 19th century. And the expansion of the railroad system on the continent helped to spur economic growth and enable new industries to emerge. They really went hand in hand. Basically, what we have on the eve of the 20th century is a second industrial revolution, if you will. And this second industrial revolution really dealt with electricity, higher grade steel, and petrochemicals. And these three entities spurred new industries based upon resources and technologies that were mere forerunners of today's industrial maturity. These industrial changes would not have been possible without the second revolution, industrial revolution, if you will. If it weren't for electricity, higher grade steel, and petrochemicals, we wouldn't have the new industries that will usher the European continent into the 20th century. There were several inventions that were essential for this second industrial revolution to actually take place. First, Henry Bessemer's process for manufacturing steel was very important. After 1870, we will have the substitution of steel in the place of iron. And this is where we're going to start to see Great Britain falling behind. By 1890, the United States was the largest steel producer. We'll also have the Solvay process of alkali production, which enabled the recovery of more chemical byproducts. The application of electrical energy to production and to homes and transportation will really start to ramp up by the latter part of the 19th century. In the 1870s, we have the first commercially practical generators of electric current. And we're also going to have the invention of the internal combustion engine in 1878. That is going to give rise to the auto. These various inventions were critical for the second wave of the Industrial Revolution. The major developments of the latter part of the 19th century were machines that required petroleum, and they basically created a great need for oil. So the second industrial revolution is characterized by steel, chemicals, electricity, and oil. And foreign markets after 1870 became saturated. So we needed to really increase the home markets for the production of these various materials that are being created by the Second Industrial Revolution. So in order to basically fuel the growth of industrial production, we have to develop more markets to sell the manufactured goods to. And that's really going to become a primary focus of the early 20th century. The end of the 19th century will also usher in new dynamics in the industrialized world. By 1900, so the early 20th century, by 1900, 80% of world industrial output is going to come from Europe and the United States. The other 20% will come from Asia. The 19th century saw a real reversal of roles, with Europe and the United States switching places with China and India in terms of trade. Europe and the United States really dominated the market. Whereas pre-industrial societies were dependent on the climate to produce favorable harvests, industrial societies, like Europe and the United States, were subject to cycles of boom and bust. And here, in the 21st century, we can readily understand those cycles of boom and bust because the United States and the world community is basically just beginning to pull out of the bust of 2008. So in the early part of the 20th century, Europe and the United States, the two biggest industrial output regions, are really trying to figure out how to create more markets for the goods they produced. This chart really illustrates the growth in the European market for industrial production. Illustrates the growth in the European market for industrial production. After 1870, there was a dramatic population increase on the European continent, which was accompanied by a rise in income. Britain and Germany, two leading industrial nations, doubled or tripled their national incomes between 1850 and 1900. Real wages increased in Britain by two-thirds and by one-third in Germany. And food prices and the prices of manufactured goods declined due to lower transportation costs. Remember back at the beginning of this lecture, I talked about the construction of the railroad industry across the continent. So more money resulted for consumer goods. The middle class is at its height in the 60 years prior to World War I. This middle class defined consumer taste and was no longer associated with the radical revolutions of the 1840s that we've already studied, but rather they were associated with the desire to protect its assets. So again, in the 60 years prior to World War I, the middle class was at its height in the European continent. The middle class grew more diverse as it came to encompass more people. We have business magnates, entrepreneurs, professionals, and these individuals had sufficient incomes for private homes and basic domestic luxuries. This will fuel and spur on this second wave of the Industrial Revolution. To go along with this rising middle class, we also started to, we need to start addressing the literacy rate of the latter part of the 19th century. By 1850, half of the population of Western Europe and a higher population of Russians are illiterate. But by 1900, 85% of people could read in Britain, France, Belgium, the Netherlands, Germany, and Scandinavia. And that was thanks largely in part to improvements in primary education. Hungary provided provided elementary education in 1868, Britain in 1870, Switzerland in 1874, Italy in 1877, and France in 1878. So that is why by the turn of the 19th to the 20th century, you started to see a real decrease in the rate of illiteracy. However, where there was less schooling, illiteracy was still rampant. Russia, for example, had a large illiterate population. Improvements in literacy led to greater secondary education opportunities in many of these countries. Both liberals and conservatives regarded primary education and basic skills such as reading, writing, and math as being necessary. What literacy enabled was it enabled Europeans to gain knowledge and improve their social situation. This notion really embodied the Enlightenment rationalist faith that knowledge would lead to right action. As you can see from this map, illiteracy was a problem in this. This is actually a map of today. Illiteracy is still a problem today, and it was a problem that was started to be conquered at the end of the 19th century into the 20th century. And the consequences of literacy are great. At the turn of the 20th century on the European continent, teaching grew as a job for women because more women became literate. For the first time, we had a mass reading public. We had an explosion of printed material because advances in printing and paper technology lowered the production costs. The number of newspapers, books, magazines, mail order catalogs, and libraries grew rapidly. And more people with different thoughts could get their thoughts into print in the late 19th century than ever before. Basically, the new literacy of the late 19th, early 20th century was the intellectual parallel of the railroad and the steamship. It was astronomical. And as you can see by this map of global literacy rates, much of the world has conquered the problem of illiteracy, but as you can see, the African continent especially still needs quite a bit of work. With this lecture, I've really tried to give you a broad overview of what was going on in terms of changes in the social and economic and cultural landscape of the European continent, primarily. In your textbook in chapter 26, you read a little bit about the Asian world as well. And sorry for those various noises you've been hearing on the last few slides of this lecture. My daughter's golden doodle is sitting next to me, and he ended up eating some bad stuff today, and he's been having some digestive problems. So I apologize for those extra noises. So in this lecture, I've really talked a lot about advanced technology, which is one of our key characteristics of civilization. I've also addressed some complex institutions such as the role of education and the role of the government in terms of population. That's it for now.